Welcome to Integrate This, your go-to EdTech podcast where curiosity meets classroom innovation. Join your hosts, David Berner and Jeremy Mikla, as we explore the rapidly evolving world of educational technology. From game-changing tools to insightful conversations with today's top EdTech voices, we're here to help educators stay informed, inspired, and ready to innovate. So tune in, level up, and let's integrate this.
Welcome to the Integrate This EdTech podcast. We're excited to bring you this episode here today as I am currently sitting in my hotel room at the ISTE conference, which just wrapped up yesterday. And so our plan here for today is David and I are going to chat about the conference, you know, some of the fun things that took place, some of the exciting new releases that might be coming out here in the near future, as well as some kind of takeaways from the conference itself. So thanks for joining us. And if you weren't at the ISTE conference, you know, maybe this is kind of that thing that will want you to go next year, because it's just such a great event with 15,000 educators that, you know, are very passionate about improving the educational experiences of their students. And that just makes it a super wonderful place to be. And David, I know you didn't get to go this year.
Yeah, I get to play interviewer this year for Jeremy, which is fun in and of itself. But I wish I could have been there with you after spending, you know, the last 2 years in Philadelphia and in Denver. But I will be with you next year in Orlando. We will do that for sure.
Perfect.
But yeah, this year I'll just play the interviewer as well.
You get the not at ISTE role here, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But I will say it was like, I already mentioned to you, you know, it was really fun just to see some of the pictures that you dropped and some of the people that you got to meet up with that we've either already interviewed or, you know, have coming up on the podcast. So really fun to see some of that stuff. But let's start at the beginning, because I think a lot of people don't know. I mean, obviously you and Mark through ECMEC, your organization, have been going to ISTE for a long time now. And one of the really cool things that you do is that ECMEC actually sponsors so that teachers are able in your region are able to attend ISTE with you, kind of like on scholarships, right? And and then there's a little bit tied to that because of the Lake ECMEC conference that's coming up in about a month. But can you talk just a little bit about maybe about the sponsorship opportunities and how that all works? And then what was the journey like getting down to San Antonio?
Sure. So this started even before I went to work at ECMEC, and I was still teaching social studies in Malacca, which is one of the schools that's part of the ECMEC cooperative. And ECMEC at that time, that was probably about 2017 or 2018, had this idea that, hey, this amazing ISTE conference is out there and we just need to get people there. And so Mark began this plan of putting together a scholarship to bring teachers from the different districts of our cooperative together, not just to attend the conference, but when you travel as that group of educators, right, you get to know each other and you're making connections with other people in different districts, and you find a way to network with them. And so, excuse me, they began this scholarship idea where, you know, it's oftentimes hard for districts to be able to pay for airfare and hotels for the length of the conference. You know, they're used to paying conference registration fees, but not for the travel and lodging expenses. So they started this scholarship program where ECMEC will pay for teachers that apply and receive for a scholarship to attend the ISTE conference. So we pay for the airfare for the hotel stays, as well as ground transportation, like back and forth from the airport. And then the teacher and their district are then responsible for the registration for the conference part of it. So it works out to be a great kind of partnership between the districts and our cooperative to send these people to the conference. We don't ask, we do ask something in return for their experience though. The requirement is that when they come back to Minnesota again, and we have our regional EdTech conference that we host called Lake ECMEC, and that happens in that first or second week of August every year. And we ask that they be presenters at that conference for a breakout session. So in return for them getting all of this knowledge and experience and, you know, finding out about new tools, new tips and tricks and pedagogies and everything, they get to come back and they get to host their own breakout session. So we get to have them as presenters, which is really kind of fun too. So that's where that really kind of all began. You know, this is my fifth time attending an ISTE conference. I attended that first one as a scholarship person that was in Chicago, like I said, in 2017 or 2018. And then I've been to the last four. So New Orleans, Philadelphia and Denver that David, you went on also. And then this one this year was in San Antonio. So that's why we're still here. We fly back here shortly, but you know, we thought this would be a great time to give some reflections about it. We've had a great time here in San Antonio. It is an absolutely beautiful city. Our hotel is literally right on the Riverwalk. I can look outside my window and I could see those little tour boats that go passing by every so often and people walking about. It's just been fantastic. Really, really loved it here.
Cool. Can you tell us a little bit about, I saw like one of the pictures right away from the first night, because you guys actually went out to eat, which is pretty customary. I mean, you guys do that every year, like once you get to the actual city from the airport ride and all that type of stuff. You guys went out. And can you talk about what you did once you landed? And then also, I would say really important is the vibe of the opening ceremony, which is always a great kickoff. They have really great guests that, you know, Richard Collada, obviously, he has the mic for a bit and kind of kicks things off, but they have great speakers too every year. Can you talk a little bit about that first night?
Yeah. So when we got here, we went, got into our hotel rooms, right? And then we decided to all go out and have lunch together, because that's kind of what we do, you know, as this big group. And people are still getting to know each other in our group. We brought, including Mark and I, there were 11 of us that were part of our group, which is really great size, right? And we went out to eat at this authentic Tex-Mexican restaurant. And so we got, you know, I'm going to say we had a beverage or so while we were there, because San Antonio is known as the margarita capital of the world. So I'm not going to say that I didn't participate in that at least once while I was down here. And it was just some fantastic food, right? Then we kind of regroup. We walk back over to the convention center, the Henry B. Gonzalez Convention Center, right in downtown San Antonio where the conference was held. And if you've not been to a large conference like ISTE before, the enormity of these buildings is just insane. You know, and you can't imagine how they can fit, you know, 15,000 people or so inside of one of these great big huge auditorium style places, where they will bring on the big keynote speakers that are there each day. And it really is a fantastic experience to be able to take that in. Kind of one of the things that Richard Collada, you mentioned him, the CEO of ISTE and ASCD, kind of challenged people. It's like, okay, by the time you're done with this conference, you should have three things. You should learn a new skill. You should learn a new skill, have a new question, and meet a new friend. And so if I think about those, oh, wow, I'm checking every single box after these last 3 days. And I know we'll talk about some of the new things that I learned and stuff along the way, but it definitely, sometimes you walk away with just as many questions sometimes as new things that you learn. So I'm excited to dive into some of those new ways of thinking that I'm kind of starting to embrace here too, which I think we'll also touch on. And then, you know, you can't not meet lots of new people while you are here. And one of those people that I met was an educator from the Seattle area. And her and I both attended this event by Magic School together. And we just had a great about hour-long conversation just getting to know each other. Her name is Lisa. And if she's watching, hey, Lisa, shout out to you and your people from Seattle area. But just really neat to be able to do all of those different things. And then they bring on some well-known people that come on and they give great and inspiring messages. I can't remember off the top of my head who was there the first day, though. You're putting me on the spot. But I know they delivered great messages.
Yeah, that's okay. It's been a long few days, so I'm sure it kind of blends together a little bit. But
yeah, I mean, from Sunday through Wednesday, right? 4 days of, you know, pretty much wall-to-wall, you know, conference-related activities, right?
Yeah, and they do a great job with like keynote speakers that they bring on every year, and then you know, obviously, just a like massive amount of sessions that you can attend and everything. Yeah. And but one of the really cool things that they do is with all the professional development opportunities that are part of the conference, they always try to tie in like something really like unique things about the area that the conference is being hosted in. Right. And we've seen this, the last few years. And so like when you're looking at San Antonio, one of the first things that you attended was the Capturing the Heart of San Antonio, a photo walk adventure. And that's like a really unique way to kick things off. Right. What was that about, or what did you notice about San Antonio that was really cool?
So there's a group of three educators, and each year they do a session at the very first opportunity in the city, wherever it is, right? They come to the town, the city, the location a day or two early, and they go scout out different places that they want to be able to walk to and lead people on, kind of like a sightseeing tour with some great photo opportunities of that particular city. The three people that put this on, this was really crazy. This was like one of those moments where you make connections to a part of your past that you don't see coming. And one of the people that leads the photo walk tour, her name is Rita Mortensen. So Rita, if you're watching too, that's really awesome. Rita is an educator, instructional technology specialist also from the Verona School District, Verona Area School District in Verona, Wisconsin, you know, go Wildcats, which I am a 1994 graduate of. And she was a teacher at that school when I went through that high school. She was a business teacher at the time, so I never took any business classes and I didn't have her as a teacher, but she was a teacher in that school. And as we started talking, you know, about, hey, do you know this person, that person sort of thing? You know, it was really kind of like became apparent to me, I remember her. And so we made this connection here. So I don't know if it's a new friendship or an old friendship, you know, one of those little Richard Collado check marks off of the things that you're supposed to do. But it was really cool. And so got a picture of the two of us together. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to put a post out on Instagram of some of the cool people I got to interact with. And Rita, you're definitely one of them. But anyway, so, you know, actually back to your question here. So they from the convention center, we started there. There's a lot of cool sculptures that are in this area of downtown San Antonio that we definitely went and took a look at. So you get some of that great artistic vibe that the city has. But of course, you know, then any tour is going to wind up on the Riverwalk. And so we stopped at some great places along the Riverwalk, like one of the maybe I'm dating myself here, but I remember the movie from the early 2000s. It's called Miss Congeniality with Sandra Bullock. David, are you familiar with Miss Congeniality? So there's that moment in there where they're doing the, I don't know, the interview portion of the contest, the Miss America contest or whatever it is, right? That scene was filmed on the Riverwalk. So the stage that the contestants are walking across is right on the Riverwalk, and then people can look at it from across the river and stuff. But really kind of a neat thing. And I'm like, oh, I remember that exact spot from the movie. So that's like one of those things. And the Riverwalk itself, just the amount of vegetation that's there is so unique and so awesome. You know, you're seeing people everywhere, whether they're just kind of touristy sightseeing or people using it to exercise. But then the amount of cool restaurants and buildings that are located right along the Riverwalk too is just really cool. And it's a lot of fun. So we stopped and took some great pictures of things along there. But then they also would share with us too, so there was a little bit of a learning experience in it too. So giving people just kind of like some tips, right, for taking pictures with your phones, and some unique perspectives that you can use and how you can slightly angle things or change, you know, maybe try in a certain photograph in black and white versus always in color, and a couple of other kind of some cool tips and tricks along the way too. So that was actually, I had tried to sign up for this the last couple of years for ISTE conferences, but they always fill up so fast. So that is going to be the first one that I try to register for when they open sessions up for Orlando for next year. And then cool. I'll get to see Ms. Mortensen again. So
yeah. I'll try to join you for that too.
For next year. For sure. I'm going to let you know for sure.
Okay.
And then maybe we try like a live walking podcast where we're kind of like,
that'd be cool.
Just turn it on and people can join us, and watch it on YouTube or something like that while we're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Get to see a little bit of it, you know, as a viewer. Yeah. That'd be cool. Let's talk about the Innovation Lab a little bit. So you had, there was two sessions that really stood out to you during the Innovation Lab, that were both part of it. One of them was called Artful Writing with Artificial Intelligence. Mm-hmm. And one of them was called AI Powered Literacy, Creating Personalized Books. Can you talk maybe just a little bit about both of those?
Yeah. So the first one on there comes from a book written by Brett Vogelsinger. And we're going to bring Brett onto this show in the near future. We're still trying to confirm a date with him. So we can talk about his book as well as kind of the cool concepts and techniques and really meaningful, instructive purposes of using AI in an English language arts setting with your writing. And it's just this concept that he has where you start with the human and then the human starts to do their writing from whatever the assigned topic is or selected topic. And they take their first draft and maybe even if it's just 200 words, right? But you're starting to lay down your own thoughts and ideas without touching AI at all. And so then you take that after you have written it, then you give that same prompt to AI and have AI limit it to 200 words. Now that student has their work, they have AI's work, and they can kind of start to, you know, use their critical thinking skills to start to analyze both drafts and maybe make some comparisons between the two, evaluate what they like from what they wrote versus what AI did and vice versa, right? Then not that you're kind of like synthesizing them together, right? But then have the student go back to their draft and either rework their draft or start over where they, again, aren't using AI other than what they remember about what they read about what AI wrote, and to start to make kind of these other connections again. And so it just seems like a great process here, which he definitely talked about in that Innovations Lab. I should say this too, if you're not familiar with that Innovations Lab concept, if you've been at a conference where they have like poster sessions and the presenter stands at a table with their poster, and then it's really, you know, you have several of them in that same area, and which then allows the attendees to walk around and learn from the different presenters in a much more intimate setting with, you know, maybe 5 or 10 people at a time. And so that's what Brett's was in part of that Innovations Lab area. So really excited to be able to chat with him and have him describe more of that process in detail and how he's used it with his students successfully, right? Then the other one, and I was really excited about this as well, was from a teacher named Elizabeth Voci, or Voci. I'm not sure if I'm saying which way is the correct way to pronounce that. But she had this really cool, and it was a reading literacy and AI literacy intertwined lesson that she was using with third graders. And so it really became this activity where the children in her class and her co-teacher's class were really working together to help teach students, you know, some new vocabulary, new science of reading instruction, but pairing that with learning about AI at the same time. So definitely they're focusing on how AI works with the kids, you know, talking about data sets, introducing things about bias. But really it was this idea where, yes, it also involved a piece of writing, and that she has students kind of create their own story map ideas for a book that they would like to write. And then they go through this process of students do some of the work, AI comes in and does some of the work, students do more, AI does more. And at the same time, they're bringing in AI literacy lessons about, you know, hallucination and bias into the particular thing. Then they have a piece where they design some artwork to go along with the stories that they're writing. And eventually what they come up with is this book that they actually went and had printed. I think they went to like Staples or somewhere and, you know, paid the money to have them produce these books. But then the kid walks away with a book that they kind of co-wrote, right, with AI. And it's also leveled to their wherever their reading level is, their Lexile level. So it was really cool. And, you know, I'm going to reach out to her too and see if we can maybe bring her on to explain it much better than I can do. But I think what I really appreciated with it was this is a great way to blend that AI literacy instruction and that you and I have been talking about here, I think, for the last month or more, and working on our own presentations about it as well. And so it was a great way to see that brought into a classroom activity, even at those elementary levels.
Yeah, and that's really cool because it's a great example, like you said, of combining some of these concepts. Like, you and I don't spend a ton of time in like actual literacy looking at like reading and things like that, but as you mentioned, you know, we're looking a lot lately at AI literacy, and we, you know, we have some sessions coming up, and we just did a session on AI literacy, so making some of those connections would be huge, because I think that's what, you know, it actually, that's an example of what it looks like in practice,
right?
So really cool. So the next part, looking at the session that you attended, Beyond the Buzz, AI tools that work, there was a couple tools that stood out to you. I know like one of them you even sent to me right away. You're like, hey, check this out, because this is really cool. What ended up happening was you sent me that. I relate it even further within our organization, and then I asked our data privacy specialist to vet it as well, because as I watched the video and looked at it, I was like, okay, I could see teachers are going to ask about this, right?
And yeah.
Some of the tools that we work with. So can you talk about those two tools that you mentioned?
Yeah. So the first one, the one that you're talking about, is AI Trust You. Like, you know, like if you would say to someone, hey, I trust you, this is AI Trust You. And what it is, it's a Google Docs add-on. And what it does is it goes through, and once you say you're a teacher and you're creating directions for an assignment that students are going to do, and you want to make sure that they understand what your expectations for AI usage for that particular assignment are going to be. And so you start with your directions for the assignment, and then you open up the add-on, the AI Trust You add-on. And it will ask you some questions. First, it'll say, are you a teacher or student? So you say, okay, I'm a teacher. Then it's going to say, are students allowed to use AI on this assignment? And if you said no, it's going to create verbiage for you, letting students know that they are not permitted to use AI on that assignment. So it is a very clear statement. Students can't miss it. It's part of the directions. It's right on the document that is your assignment. If you say yes, that students are allowed to use it, then it's going to say, okay, which AI tools are they allowed to use? Like, are they allowed to use Grammarly? Are they allowed to use Magic School or Gemini or ChatGPT? And you can check the boxes on the AI tool that you want them to use. And it's really customizable. Like, your Google admin person can go in and they can choose the different tools that are available for you to use with that checkbox. Then, not only does it ask you what tools that you're going to allow students to use and to select the ones, the next thing that you get to do is say how students are allowed to use it. Like, can they use it to brainstorm? Can they use it to give feedback on a written draft of something they're working on? Or can they use it to help find sources? Whatever those different things are that you want them to use them for, you can click again the check mark in the boxes, and it will then take all of that stuff and it's going to create the verbiage that you would want, the disclaimer statement about AI usage, and so that you're very transparent with students, you're very upfront about what they are. And you know, we've talked, I know David and I sometimes in a couple of different sessions that we've had or in conversations with guests that we've had on the podcast about kind of like that stoplight concept where red is no usage, green is full go, and yellow is kind of that, yes, you can use it in some cases. So this kind of, it kind of takes those ideas of that stoplight, but puts it into that disclaimer statement that goes on to that document. Then students also have the ability to use AI Trust You. And what they can do is to use it as a way to describe for their teachers how they used AI in that particular assignment. And they can determine with the little slider kind of like what percentage work did you do versus AI. And so I think that open, honest exchange of the use of AI between both teacher and student could be really, really cool. And so that's the one I know that you and I had to share that one with you, like literally as I'm walking away from that session and I'm trying to text it to you and try not to run into people or walls while I'm doing it. But
yeah, and that one really gets to me too. Like, I like the fact that because some of our conversations have been going beyond the traffic, the stoplight model into like individual assignments and helping teachers kind of, you know, put on their individual assignments, like, what is the acceptable use in this? And this is something that they can actually select the various tools that are okay to be used within this, you know, you're on the Google Doc. It's basically telling students like, these are acceptable. This is what, you know, kind of setting some of those expectations with the tool.
Right. And it's totally customizable. And the teacher doesn't really have to give a whole lot of extra thought to it because that thinking for them has kind of already been there. So it's just literally selecting those different boxes. Yeah, and then the other one, and I've known it existed and I've seen it used, but I just have not had a time to dive into it. So, you know, like Richard Collada talked about, one of those questions for you is, I got to find ways to use Canva Code, which is another one that was in that Beyond the Buzz session, and just have the opportunity to be able to dive into that. You know, but it's like other things, you just have to have the time.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff that Canva has actually released recently, a lot of updates, right? Yeah. All the AI stuff. So yeah, there's quite a bit to catch up on there. So
yes,
but a lot of great stuff. Okay, so let's talk about Eric's session. So did AI write this essay? And I know there is a bit of connection, I think, with this one with AI Trust You as well, because Eric talked about that, right? But what was his session like? And what are schools, you know, how are they going to manage student use of AI writing? If you can answer that from his session, or maybe just what were key takeaways from there?
Yeah. So going to a session with Eric Kurtz is it's almost literally like having him as a guest on the podcast because he's the exact same person. And it doesn't matter if it's a virtual audience, if it's an in-person audience, or if there's two people in the room or there's 250 people in the room because he's exactly the same. So that was kind of like the first thing that I really, really noticed. And it was very much, he had his presentation slides and Eric shares everything. And he puts it all on a HyperDoc, but it's got his slides on there. It's got his resources on there. It's got links to other related things. And, you know, it's just very much the session that way then can be driven by the attendees in the room and what they really want to hear more about. And so what people really wanted to hear a lot about at this particular session to start with, was kind of that, you know, learning still needs to be a struggle. There shouldn't be an easy button, that, you know, we have to find a way to limit the students' cognitive offloading that could take place if they have that ability to push the easy AI button all the time. That, you know, effective learning is going to be something that causes you discomfort. That's going to be something that you have to struggle, you know, to try to get better at all the time, which AI can help you do, right? But you got to find the ways to use it appropriately in order to make that happen. So one of the things that it was really kind of cool, because I remembered back to our interview with Eric, and even the title of our episode with him was Pedal Powered Pedagogy, right? He used the example of like an electric bike versus like a motorcycle, which he talked about on our show as well, you know, where if you want to get on the motorcycle just to go from point A to point B as fast as you can, you know, you can, and that's the easy AI button, right? And sometimes there's good reason to do that. But other times, you know, you want to be part of that productive struggle process. And so on an electric bike, right, you have the ability to pedal that bike yourself. But if you get to the point where you need a little bit of assistance because you're running out of steam, you're running out of ideas or energy, you know, then you can engage that electric part and it can help carry you along for a certain amount of time. You know, but eventually you're going to, you know, run out of battery or whatever. But, you know, it's that same point. You can turn that back off again when you're ready to, you know, be that active learner once again. And so that was really kind of cool how we talked about that as part of that process. And he also talked about a study from MIT that came out recently. And I see David's nodding his head that I think he knows what I'm talking about how, yeah, AI, analyzing people that have been using AI to do an assignment versus people that have not used it to do an assignment, that there is much more active brain, what are they, they do those brain scans, brain activity, right? Yeah. That is involved in tasks that are done by human only, versus tasks that, you know, the teacher engages AI to do it fully and then just like skims through it and maybe reads it. There's like no learning basically that takes place.
Lack of neurons firing, right?
There you go. Yeah. That, obviously, I am not a brain scientist and no one has ever accused me of anything like that. But then, you know, it then talked about too, like it at first, you look at the study and it's very much like disheartening. That AI is really going to cause us to become dumber. But there's also this idea, and here again, I'm reminded back to the artful writing with AI, that Brett Vogelsinger session that I went to in that innovations lab, that it's kind of the same process. If that they took those same groups from that study, that and the group that did the human part first, then they were allowed to use AI. Then they went back to human again, and it really showed that it accelerated the amount of neurons firing and stuff in that process than it did with just the human alone group at the very beginning. So there is definitely advantages to, you know, bringing AI as that partner in it at the right moments and in the right manners. And it ended with a much more AI optimistic kind of a feel to it.
Sure. Yeah. And I think too, it's really fascinating because the, you know, we have a lot of these studies coming out because everything's so new and there's research being done. And so there's, you know, the studies, which I think are really important to read, to gain some insights from, but then there's what's always fascinating is also their reactions to the studies that are coming out. So there always seems to be kind of some split camps around this stuff, in regard to AI and more specifically like the help versus harm aspect. yes. and what that's all doing. So I think at the very least, if you're someone who, you know, if that affects, like if you're an educator or something, I really think it's worth taking the time to read some of these things and looking at some of the conversation around them, because it will help at least put some things in perspective or keep you informed as to what's going on.
And don't just get caught in the trap of seeing the headline that whatever reporter made out of it, like, AI is causing us to become stupider. You know, like if you just read that, but don't actually dive in to find out what are the ways that it's actually impactful and helpful, then you're really missing out on it.
Yeah. There's a lot of,
you get to the study itself, you know, then you can definitely get your own takeaways from it.
Yep. And there's a lot of nuance. I mean, nothing is really cut and dry. Let's move on to the Future Ready Playground. There was quite a few educators and people at the conference that were part of that area, but I did want to specifically mention Becky Keene, because you did get a chance to meet Becky. Becky will be on the podcast in August, so that's another really great one to look forward to. We'll be talking about her book, AI Optimism. But funny enough, like you said, that you didn't really, that wasn't really brought up a ton. And when you were listening to Becky's presentation, I guess you could call it in the playground area, but do you want to talk a little bit about like future ready skills, tools that were showcased, and maybe something that grabbed your attention during that?
Yeah. So I'm also, after now attending, you know, that little session that Becky had inside that playground area, really excited to bring her on. And I know both you and I have been reading her book already, and have gotten a lot of cool takeaways, especially I think how she's aligning a lot of AI use with the SAMR model, which I think is kind of like a great way to showcase some of those different ways of using AI and ramping up you know, your usage of it. But that really wasn't the start to the focus of her project, that she was sharing how she had worked with another teacher. And again, in a way similar to the students that were making the book in the third grade classroom, she had a project here where it involved students learning. It was done during the month of March, so it had a focus on Women's History Month. And so her students, which I think were like fifth or sixth graders, were learning about important women in U.S. history. It happened to be a U.S.-based classroom with U.S. history content, the teacher that she was working with, but I think it could definitely be expanded to include many others. And so she actually went to School AI, to their site, and found, you know, they have the chat with characters part or spaces that have already been pre-created. And so she went and chose like Harriet Tubman, Amelia Earhart, I think Frida Kahlo, and there was one other one, I'm not remembering who it was right now. And the students were able to choose one of those characters. And then she opened up the space for students to use within School AI to have like a chat with that character to learn more about that person's life, about, you know, their accomplishments, maybe their struggles and things that they've had to overcome. And so that's how the students learned kind of their biographies. Then she tied this in with this idea of creating a logo that represents, you know, many of the different types of things about, like, even a company would have, you know, and why they choose to include certain items in that logo, or colors, or, you know, styles and that sort of thing. So the students then learned about designing logos. And so she created her own space that went through kind of a creative design process for creating a logo for a company. Then, so they take then, they've know this content about these important women in history, and they got some ideas about what it takes to make an effective logo design. And then they're tasked with trying to make a logo for that particular famous person from history. And what they often find when they start designing things, you know, like Amelia Earhart, for example, she had her students that chose her, and they start to write the prompts for creating an image. And so they think about, well, what sort of content do you need to include in your prompt? So it's really bringing like some AI literacy stuff in here too, to be able to get the result that you want. And every kid that had chose Amelia Earhart talked about a pilot, right? And they never said female pilot. And every time that they typed in just pilot, they got a male as the center of that particular image. So they had to stop and say, okay, how can we change this to make sure that we're getting it to reflect what we want it to reflect, and how it becomes then even that iterative process. So that's really what she spent most of her time talking through, is that particular assignment that their students had been working on. So it was really kind of cool to see how, you know, that AI literacy is being embedded into other areas as well.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think it's interesting too. Like, you obviously, you had an opportunity to meet people that you have not met before, but you know, like Becky, that's going to be on the podcast and everything. But one of the great things about ISTE too is that you get a chance to kind of reconnect with people you have already met. Right. So yeah. One of those people is Manuel. Manuel, we had, and if you guys want to see like some really great art and sketchnoting and all that type of stuff, you can for sure check out the episode that we did with Manuel, but definitely go to manueldraws.com, where he has a lot of his work. And we met Manuel in Denver and had opportunity to see one of his sessions. And art is his whole jam, right? Like, I mean, that's mm-hmm. his area. Mm-hmm. He does a lot of stuff with tools. I think he does some stuff with Samsung, I believe it is.
Yep, Samsung.
Yep.
And then he also has begun illustrating children's books. Kind of on his own too. And he had some samples of some of the illustrations that he did. I didn't take any pictures of it, but he was showing it off to people in that session that we were at, and he's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And super, super nice guy. You know, very, very friendly and fun to talk to. But you attended a session of his, as you just mentioned. That one was called From Doodles to Discovery. And one of the things I always appreciated about our conversation with Manuel was his whole idea behind anyone can draw, right? Like, everybody yes. can draw. You don't have to feel like you can't. And he makes drawing and art very approachable, and has a great attitude about like anybody can do it. So can you talk a little bit about that session and, you know, the power of visual thinking and how he uses tech to support all those concepts?
Yeah. And he'd probably be the first one to say too, like, yeah, use tech to help support this. But if you just want to draw on paper, you know, like, that's totally cool too. Whatever, you know, don't let the technology be the limiter that stops you from, you know, wanting to do it. So find your own path with that. But he just has this way about him too, that he is, like you had said, just as he lowers that threshold, that barrier. Like, we had definitely people that were in that session that were art teachers, right? And they probably saw this as like, oh, I'm going to learn some great art things that will really ramp up my game. And I'm sure they did, because he's so good at kind of helping meet everyone that's in the audience there at whatever level they're at. But there's definitely more like the woman that was sitting at the table with me, who is from St. Louis. And I could tell like right away was like, oh, I'm not going to be able to draw anything. And she only came with it because her friend was with her. And that's the session that that person wanted to go to. So it was just like really cool then to see her by the end of that hour and a half, like, totally, this is so cool. It's so easy. You know, like, I can't believe I can do this. And, you know, because Manuel just makes it simple enough, but yet shows you how you can expand upon where you begin with. But even if you don't get to that point, it's still just really neat to see it all come together. And the one that sticks out with me, like, yeah, anybody can do this. If you just have a piece of paper in front of you and with a pencil or pen, and you just start to make some random shape doodle drawing, you know, for about 3 seconds, okay, just whatever shapes and around that you want to do, you can turn that into a bird, and it will look like a bird. And all you have to do then is pick a spot on that doodle that you made, add a beak, add an eye or two, give it feet, with the little three-toed kind of things at the bottom. And if you want two wings, and it will look like it's a bird. And he had us do that like 5 or 6 times, and we're like, oh man, that turned out like I can recognize this as a bird. But even if it didn't, he just like, well, then just write the word bird next to it and people know what you're talking about. So that was one of the things that I remember. But he has some just simple ways of drawing animals and people and buildings and mountains and all of these other different things that can be a person's entry into an area like sketchnoting. So that's where it started to get, you know, progress a little bit further within the session, and how sketchnoting can be really used to help those students, especially remember key concepts, remember key vocabulary words, because the way that their brains work are allowing them to make connections from the visual, you know, to the content. And if they can see it, even if it's in a simplistic representation, they're much more likely to remember it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's awesome. If you haven't seen our episode with Manuel, I would definitely recommend, because he basically kind of takes us through that tutorial style of like, this is how you do that. Gives like, I think he did 6 shapes, I believe, in our video, and kind of showed like, this is how you can start doing this. It's very.
Yeah. You take like a rectangle, a triangle, a circle,
yep,
a line. I think dots.
Yeah.
And there might have been one more.
Yeah. And he just like uses them as the building blocks to eventually get to an illustration, essentially. Yeah. Right.
He's like, if you can draw these 6 things, you can draw anything. Yeah. And it's really cool.
Yep. Yeah. Super encouraging. So that's great. It's cool to see that you got to catch up with him. And then let's kind of deviate a little bit. Cause I know after all the day of spending, you know, walking and walking and walking and then attending sessions. So a lot of walking, a lot of sitting, a lot of listening, a lot of, you know, talking here and there, eventually when the day kind of comes to an end, each day, there is what's known as the ISTE nightlife, right? So you got your after hours fun, some time events that you and I have got to enjoy together and go to some festivities and things. So can you talk a little bit about like what was the fun that you guys got to enjoy after the long day of walking around and some of the things that you got to experience?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that we haven't touched on at the ISTE conference is the most amazing, gigantic exhibit hall with all of the different vendors. And it is just so huge, you guys. If you haven't ever been to a conference, it's hard to describe how big that area is with how many different vendors that occupy that space. And that I bring that up because it's a huge shout out to any of the vendors that participate in the entire ISTE conference, because man, they are constantly on that whole time with everybody walking through that particular area to check out their products, to see latest updates. And I mean, yeah, there's like ginormous booths for like Google and Microsoft and many other companies as well. But then there's the smaller ones that are there too. And one of those that stands out in my mind is Snorkel. Snorkel is a formative assessment tool that brings AI in to help students kind of see where they can make improvements even before they turn their assignments into teachers and stuff, but still prevents that cognitive offloading of students, because it's not going to give them the answer. It's going to kind of push them in that direction, you know, that using that electric bike is needed. So I just wanted to give a shout out to all the vendors here first, right? But it's really the vendors then that put on the nightlife events. So that's where I was kind of going with that, but I had to like give them the credit first. And so every night there are multiple different after hours fun events that the vendors put on at local establishments and wherever we're at. You can find any of these in any night, and you just sign up for them, and then you go, and they usually have like free appetizers for you. The first night we went to one that was kind of like it was at the Hard Rock in San Antonio, and it was a bunch of different smaller vendors that maybe couldn't afford to have an exhibit space at the actual conference itself. But they put this on and they had different booths and tables for you to come experience some of their different things they have to offer to schools that aren't the big companies, right? And so that was really cool. They had some great food that was spread out on a buffet for us. And I like to tell people, like, I don't think I've paid for a dinner at ISTE in 5 years that I've gone. Like, there's, you eat enough food just walking around to these different events that it's really cool. The second night on Monday night was a great event. Actually, I went to a couple of different ones that were put on. One, probably the most fun one was the one from Vivacity. And it was a dueling pianos that were up on the stage. They're taking requests from people for songs to play, and getting audience participation and everything like that. And again, they have got the food, you know, and for those that wish, they do have a couple of drink tickets that you get too. You know, of course, if when in Rome, you're going to do what the Romans do. And when you're in San Antonio, you'll drink margaritas. And so that was a lot of fun. And then for me though, I think the highlight of all of those after events each year, is EdTech Karaoke, which happens on Tuesday night of the conference. Which is great. It's put on by several different companies. ClassLink is one, for example, that is involved with that one. And I could go mention them all, but I don't want to forget anybody, but I know that's kind of, and Symbaloo is kind of like the other big one with that. but they put on this event and the people, you actually have to audition ahead of time to be on the stage at this karaoke concert that takes place. And it's not just someone with a little machine hit and play on a song and words that come up on a screen. You have a live actual band that is playing along that you're singing with. Yeah. And these people that become, that are these contestants in this competition here, are all educators, and they are just the most amazing singers. And I think of the 5 years that I've gone, this has had the best talent by far. Like the top three, I think I would have picked one of those people. Like I thought there were three other people that deserved to also be on that stage, but it was so good.
Yeah. And it's legit too. I mean, they have like a sound tech in the back usually and everything.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's pretty legit, and they set it up nicely for those that sing, and the rest of us get to enjoy it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and because you know they're fellow educators in the trenches along with you, like they just get the crowd so involved, and you know, it's just amazing. I would love to see those people that were performing in their actual classroom spaces, because I can just imagine they're probably the same person. They just got a group of kids in front of them instead of, you know, a couple thousand people in an auditorium.
Yeah. Very cool. We'll kind of wrap up here. It sounds like everything was super fun. Everybody stayed safe, I'm guessing. So you can come back to Minnesota here and resume your normal activities, but definitely bummed that I didn't get to join you this year, but next year for sure we'll get into it and have fun in Orlando, right?
Yeah. And we encourage everybody, if you are able to find a way to get to Orlando, and it'll be a good time. I think it'll be another hot one. You know, just remember the conference itself is in an air conditioned facility. So,
right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It sounds like it was a great time. So thanks, everybody, for watching. Hopefully you can take a look at ISTE, look at what they have set up for next year and everything. And really, like Jeremy said, consider attending. And I think there's just so much value there that you get out of going and meet a lot of great people, have a lot of great food. You can have a margarita if you want. All sorts of fun to be had. And that's saying nothing even about the keynotes and professional development and all that goes into it. So, and they do a great job. Make sure you stay tuned. We have a lot of great guests coming up in future episodes. We will be having, like we mentioned, Becky Keene on the podcast, Thomas Hummel, who is a co owner of EduAid. which Jeremy has connected with prior. And then we will have Amanda Bickerstaff from AI for Education on as well in the coming month here. So a lot of great stuff to look forward to. Make sure you keep an eye on that and subscribe. And thanks for watching the episode and come to ISTE. Thanks for listening to Integrate This. Want to take your learning further? Head over to our YouTube channel for quick tutorials, deep dives, and more EdTech tips you can use right away. Don't forget to subscribe and catch new podcast episodes every Thursday on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, keep exploring, keep innovating, and keep integrating this.